Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman, have you ever noticed how when you ask people about their life goals, almost everybody, from a little kid to an older person, says, I just want to be happy. I mean, we buy things, we start relationships, we go places, we seek out experiences because of how we think they will make us feel, hoping it'll be happy. This pursuit of happiness can turn out well, I guess, but it seems like it's just as likely to lead to a mountain of debt and/or massive disappointment. Until we realize that happiness is actually not something that we can earn, acquire, or attract, the search continues for years, if not decades. So I invited today's guest, Laura DiBenedetto, because she has a fascinating story about this pursuit of happiness. You see, Laura was what I call a shooting star, an entrepreneur by the age of 19 and already retired at 37. Laura overcame a backstory of bullying, burnout, and bankruptcy. And like me, she's neurodivergent. I think Laura is an example of so many women I've met who are fueled both by their own innate drive, but also by the effects of trauma. And in my experience, more often than not, the harder we strive for happiness, the more it can evade us, even when the world sees us as highly accomplished and successful. Well, Laura is now a best-selling author of the book, The Six Habits. She's a TEDx speaker, a happiness coach, and like me, she learned many of her lessons the hard way and now helps others get there with a lot less stress. If you happen to be an entrepreneur who is driven to overcome a difficult past, you are going to want to lean in and listen closely. I found Laura's journey to be an inspiring one, and I'm so happy to share it and her with you today. So Laura, we have already established that we have a lot in common. We both have ADHD, we're both entrepreneurs, we're both ENTJs, and we both are super nerdy when it comes to all things about the brain and habits and happiness and how to get shit done. So let's open up with that, because you are the habit and happiness queen, and most people would never think those two things belong in the same sentence.
No, and they most certainly wouldn't think that they belong in a woman from a very cold, bitter area of the country.
Also true.
Yeah. The embittered New Englander, cold and armored. I wrote a book about happiness. And in other ironic news,
the nerve. Not only that, but I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but when you grow up not very happy, not very happy at all. In fact, your life sucks ass when you're a kid. Nobody expects things to go well for you later in life and for you to be able to turn that shit around on your own. So I think that's one of the things that's impressive too. But like, did you just stumble across how to make yourself happier, or did you have to climb up the mountain in Nepal and find some wizened guru? Like, how did you pull that together?
It was probably a blend of the two. I had to go to the guru that was inside my head. And So it's out. The secret is no longer a secret. I am a nerd. I love research and I love geeking out on like data. I love looking for patterns and stuff like that. So as you mentioned before, I was 37 when I retired. And when I did that, you know, I had this big expectation. Well, I'm going to write off, you know, on my white horse into the sunset and I will be happily ever after. Bullshit. That is not what happened. I was actually depressed I was entirely bereft. I was wondering who the hell I was. I was wondering what my value in the world was. And I just felt lost and empty. And I was like, great. So I have money and awards and achievements and all these lovely things. And who gives a shit? Not me. And it made me wonder, like, well, okay, who am I when I don't have those things? And I didn't know, because I had always chased the achievements and the highs and the accolades.
The dopamine, let's face it, the dopamine. It's all about the dopamine.
I was a major druggie. I was all about the dopamine. And yeah, like when all of the achievement, all that stuff was laid aside, I was just left with myself. And all those years, I had never actually bothered to work on me. I just, you know, neglected myself. I actually burned my ass into the ground. My health suffered. My mental health was really suffering. My marriage was on fire. I'm really surprised and grateful that I'm still married now.
To the same person?
Oh, yes. Miraculously.
My hat's off to you, sister. I wasn't able to pull that one off.
He's a saintly man. So, you know, I just got really pissed off. And I think that a lot of things come from rage. And entrepreneurship comes from rage sometimes, and some of the best inspiration. And I was so angry at myself that I was like, why the hell did this happen? And how could I let this happen to myself? So I was like, well, okay, clearly I don't know what the hell happiness is. I know what it's not. So I started looking for the definition. And the more I looked for the definitions, more questions started to reveal themselves. Mm-hmm. And the one that I opened my TED talk with was, what do the happiest people have in common? And, you know, subtext, how can I have that too?
Right. Because you'd done all the things. I mean,
I'd read all the books. I did the things. I didn't go to Nepal, but I went to some other awesome places and tried to find God and didn't. So,
but you became an entrepreneur. I mean, many of the Driven Woman audience are entrepreneurs at various stages, and you became an entrepreneur at a very tender age. I mean, you were barely out of your teens. Mm-hmm. I think you might've even still been in the teens. You were 19, right, at the time. And yes. So isn't that the goal, like, of all the hustle and grind entrepreneurs, to go fast, go big, and then get out? Like, if you can retire before 40, you've got the golden ticket. You've won the prize. You hit the bill, you know, the whole thing. And that's supposedly what everybody is after. Got the book,
correct.
Got the TEDx talk, got all the things. You did all the things. You did them well.
Right.
Like accolades after accolades, awards after awards, appearances after appearances, all the things. Mm-hmm. And then not even 40, you're like, this is bullshit. I'm fucking miserable. Like, not something a lot of the hustle and grinders want to get out. But that's not really where happiness is it?
No. And, you know, the thing about it that I just have to look back on, because it's so much easier to see things in hindsight, isn't it? Is I look back and I'm just like, wow, I achieved, I made money, I did all the things. But at the end of the day, I can take none of it with me except my own integrity and my own self. And that's the one thing I never actually worked on. And it's so ironic, because our culture and our society pushes this whole hustle and grind bullshit, mm-hmm. and neither which I consider to be positive terms. It's basically, hey, whoever gets up the earliest and sleeps the least wins the prize. No, fuck that. No, that'll give me intestinal issues. And it did, you know, and work 12 hours a day and make sure you burn the candle at both ends. And, you know, you please everybody except yourself. No, that doesn't really work. So, I mean, I was so empty, like absolutely empty. I had nothing, because I never actually filled myself up with anything. And I remember being skeptical of religion and spirituality. And I remember trying different yoga things, and I went on retreats and I did all this stuff and I read hundreds of books. And I always felt the same, because I was still caught up in this belief that here and now is insufficient. That is a lie. Here and now is beautiful. And it's all that's guaranteed. This is it right now. And a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to work my ass off. And then I'm going to someday when I retire, then I'm going to go to Italy. Bitch, book your tickets now.
Yeah. You might not even live that long, or your bleeding ulcer will take you out of the game before you're 50.
Bingo. You know? So like, I just kind of had this huge awakening and realizing that I was not present. I was not living for today, and I was giving away my youth, and I don't have children. And to be perfectly candid, I gave that away, because I'm 40, and yes, I could probably try it if I wanted to, but I don't feel like being medically fucked with to force children on a body that's like, nah, I think I'm good. you know,
no more fresh eggs in that fridge.
Oh no, they're a little dusty. So yeah, I'm just like, you know, I made my sacrifices, and we as a culture, we do not value here and now. We do not value rest. We do not value appreciating what we have, because we have such a society and culture built on consumption, consumption, and the consumption of victories and the consumption of achievement. Consume, 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 consume. I mean, Jesus Christ, can we get off this fucking hamster wheel and just enjoy our lives? Yes. And this is the thing that I finally realized when I retired. I had so much time to sit with myself and my ugly thoughts and just hate everything. I was like, wow,
surprise.
I was sold a bill of goods. I bought all of it. What a fucking scam. It's all a bunch of bullshit. All of it.
Hey, dumbass. Now you get to wake up.
Uh-huh.
Like,
and this
for
is
real
where the book came
up.
From. Because yes. I was like, no. None of this shit is happiness. It's nice to win the awards. It's nice to make the money. It's nice to achieve. It really is. But it's not the big it that we're all searching for. The big it we're all searching for is meaning.
Yeah. And you have to be mindful for that. And I know I've been a meditator and a Buddhist for over a decade now, but I know, and I found my way there through chronic pain. I wasn't looking, but that was the entry point. But I think you're right about becoming mindful. I don't think too many people realize that depression is fundamentally because we're paying attention to the past and our regrets. And anxiety is because we're paying attention to the future and all the things we're worried about that may or may not happen. The only thing that isn't present is mindfulness. And in the moment, you probably aren't feeling either of those things.
No, nope. I think at some point, we all need to come to that point when we realize and have the awakening with ourselves. Wow, this is a bunch of crap. This is not it. I was not put on this earth to hustle and grind and win a participation trophy for working the most hours. That's not why I was given life. Life is such a special and rare gift. And it's something where we squander it on dumb shit that doesn't matter in the cosmos. At the end of our lives, are we going to look back and be like, God damn, I'm so glad I worked till 10 p.m. every night of my life? Or are we going to look back and, wow, I'm so glad I was at my daughter's play. I'm so glad I got to see my son at his soccer game. I'm so glad I got to walk in the sand with my husband on the beach and feel the warmth of the sun on my face. What do you want to be grateful for when you die?
I think, and there's a very good book, which I cannot think of the name of right now, but basically the things that people regret when they're dying, and they always regret the things they didn't do. And when you are chasing the validation and the dollars and the achievements and climbing up the food chain, there isn't enough room. There isn't enough time. There isn't enough bandwidth for all those things. I think there would be people who would hear what you have to say, Laura, and say, well, that's easy for you to say that none of those things matter because you have them. I think there may be people that will say, okay, well, let me have those things and then I can walk away as well. But while I'm in the climb, I'm not quite ready to do that. Do you find that it's hard for people to accept the message that what you're chasing, what you are hanging your hat on, and all of your energy and every day of your life, it isn't going to satisfy you? What do you think? They have to reach a certain point of suffering or disillusionment where they can actually wake up to what you have to share with them?
Well, I think once you realize that that there's one basic principle that will follow you, everywhere I go, there I am. You'll still be the same person when you have those things. Mm-hmm. And I am the same, you know, person that I was when I achieved all those things. And the difference is perspective, and the difference is prioritization. Mm. And you have to decide what matters to you. And, you know, the thing is, we have all collectively, and I say all with air quotes, right? We've all collectively agreed that social media matters, and that it's an important part of life, and that we need, air quotes, to be on it. Mm-hmm. And that it somewhat gives us something. We have to be willing to be rebellious and challenge the agreements that we make with ourselves and others, and be willing to upset people, because most of the time, the things that we have agreed are valuable, that we have agreed are our goals, that we have agreed are important to us, actually do not originate with us. they are not our own agreements. We've just perhaps got caught up and went with the flow. So to rebel looks like this. I don't find social media makes me happy. So goodbye. I'm logging out. If you want to talk to me, you have my phone number and deactivate your account. Mm-hmm. I just did that yesterday. I'm done. I hate it. It doesn't make me happy. I'm the product. I'm over it. And I already had like some pushback yesterday. Oh my God. Well, how am I going to, you know, connect with you and you're not going to see my photos? Well, then you can either text me or not, but I refuse to participate in something that isn't going to serve me. Oh, and then other people need to either wake up or, you know, just disengage. It's fine. You know, I remember when my mother, God love her, wanted me to be successful and to become certain things. She wanted those things for me because she didn't have them for herself. And she loved me and wanted to see her goals come true, at least for somebody that she loved, right? Even if it wasn't for her. I had to let her down more than once. Mommy, that's not my goal. And I don't want to do that. And I know you want me to be this person. I'm sorry. Neither one of us are going to get to do it. And I remember when I moved to Hawaii, it broke her heart. But I won't get to see you all the time. Well, airplanes exist. I'm going to follow my dreams and, you know, retiring and ultimately at the end of the day, we have to decide that we are the priority. And when you do that, you can actually change how you view what's going on. And it's like, you know, if you don't have money and you're chasing money and you're chasing career security, to your point, it's hard to believe that those things won't actually make you happier. It's so hard to believe. They might make you feel more secure. They definitely do those things. I'm not going to dispute that they have value. They do.
Up to a certain price point, though. I think you've probably seen the same literature that I have, that I think that you actually can increase your happiness with more income, but only up to about 75 grand. Beyond that, there's no correlation between more money and more happiness.
None. Yeah. I mean, at this point in my life, I have income that far surpasses my bills, and it's all passive income. So by all definition, I'm wealthy, regardless of how much money I have in the bank. And that's the entire point. So whether I make another active dollar today or tomorrow, it doesn't do anything for me. And I also live humbly. I don't live in a mansion. I don't drive a fancy car. I like to keep things small because, you know, shit happens. Sometimes the stock market crashes, whatever. And I don't really want to have to be stressed out. So for me, I wanted the security. And once I achieved it, anything over and above that ceases to matter. So that means that the real precious asset that I'm chasing, it's not money, it's time. And the luxury of doing with my time what I choose, and that doesn't have any influence by my husband, my mother, social media, or any of the powers that be. It's like, no. Everybody can pipe down. I get to decide what my life looks like. And, you know, I would say, yes, by all means, achieve and go for passive income and get to a certain point, but also maybe enjoy the journey and stop and look around while you're on the road to getting that and realize this is pretty fucking sweet. I can actually stop and enjoy this journey because this is cool.
Well, yeah, because I think that's one of the biggest problems with the whole hustle and grind is that the promise is that you're making the sacrifices now. Yeah, your life sucks ass now. The fact that you never see your family, you never see your friends, you're eating while working, you're not getting enough sleep, like all of that. But in the end, later on down the road, you're going to reach this point. And I think that
arbitrary someday.
It has to be. Well, listen, I know a lot of wealthy people and I know a lot of serial entrepreneurs. And when they reach the point where they're like, okay, I'm selling this business, I'm going to start a new one, I don't think they really realize how many of them are actually addicted to the lifestyle. And they're not even, they don't need the money. They don't need, there isn't anything they're lacking, but you get hooked on the forward momentum of it. Yes. And as long as you're hooked, and I trust me, as a person with ADHD, I don't have to tell you, momentum is everything. But it's like you kind of have to step off the perpetual motion machine to get in touch with what your values are. And I don't think most people would say making more money is ultimately what they value most. But if you look at their behavior, that's what it seems to be. A lot of people will be pissed hearing this, but I think COVID, the pandemic, other than the loss of life and the incredible strain that our healthcare system has been put under, I think it's been a gift to many people because it eliminated all the distractions and all of the useless pastimes and kind of gave people the opportunity to sit down and pay attention and think about the people that share their life intimately under their own roof. And since you're going to be locked up together for a good little while, now it's been over a year, why don't you deal with that instead of whatever you think is out there? I see a lot of people whose lives have changed for the better as a result of having all those distractions eliminated. What do you think about that?
I completely agree. I think people who have been terrified of stillness their whole lives found themselves in it, facing the big scary silence and facing themselves and a lack of a commute. So different choices had to be made, you know. It's do or die, really. And I think, yeah, there's been tremendous tragedy. No matter how you feel about everything that's gone on, so many people have been negatively affected by all these things. And so many people have been positively affected. And I think perspective is one of the biggest shifts. And I think one of the things I've actually noticed a lot with my coaching clients has been the revelation of this slavery to momentum. It's interesting that you brought that up because I've got this one client whom I absolutely adore, and she is completely enslaved to needing a goal and needing momentum and she doesn't even need to make money. I'm like, why are you doing this? She's like, well, I need to have a goal. What is so wrong with enjoying what you have? And she can't answer the question. So this is something that we've been working on quite a bit. And you know, there's the goal there of actually changing your relationship with leisure and play and actually bucking the societal definition of those things being frivolous. So right now, anyone listening who has an inability to sit still, it's because you've made a negative judgment against those and yourself for sitting still as if leisure is frivolous and frivolity is to be condemned. And that's a judgment I'd like you to reexamine. It's harmful for us to forget the divine art of play. It's harmful for us to have no idea how to be children anymore. It's harmful for us to stay on a hamster wheel that doesn't really serve us when there's so many other possibilities for how we could live our lives if we just slow down long enough to consider them.
I love that you bring up play and frivolity. I think one of the things I notice for many people with ADHD is the sense of wonderment, the sense of childlike exuberance, and the ability to seek out and enjoy play. It is labeled by others as childish when it's actually childlike. And what is labeled a symptom of impulsivity, I see in many cases, is the spontaneity that all children have before we culturally condition it out of them.
How wonderful that I have ADHD and no one could condition that out of me and make me much more boring.
Right? Boredom is a life-threatening condition when you have an active mind. But speaking of active mind, and because we're talking directly and indirectly about mindfulness, about being present to yourself, to your thoughts, to your existence in this moment, not the future one that you're forecasting about and stressing about or whatever mistakes you think you made in the past, but this very moment. Do you practice any form of meditation?
I do and I don't. As a person who really, really doesn't enjoy routine, like passionately hate it, I find my meditative moments here and there, and variety is the spice of life for me. I'll go for a walk and I'll just meditate. You know, walking meditation is a thing. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Of course.
But that's fairly common. I totally like get in the zone when I'm like cleaning, or I will just, I don't know, stare at one of the lizards hopping across my grass and just kind of hang out with them for a little while and be just in a state of total presence and mindfulness with this little creature. you know, I mean, not to get too poetic here, but I see God in everything. I see God in the trees. I see God in the little lizard that's running across the grass, in the sun, in the rain. I see God in you, and I see God in me. And any experience I can possibly have with the divine is a good one. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily need to be still in order to receive that. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is really just being super, super connected to what is. And some people need to meditate. And some people can't meditate. And I am one of those who can, and I'm grateful, but I have to want to sit down to do it. So I've had to learn, actually, surprisingly, I've had to learn all the different ways that I can actually plug into the divine without having to sit still.
Yeah, I think it's, I like to think of that you don't have to meditate to be in a meditative state. Because we put so many artificial restrictions on things. You need to sit still. You need to be on a mat. You need to have your eyes closed, whatever. Empty your mind. I can't empty my mind. I'm sure you can't either. But I want to come back to something you said a minute ago, Laura, that you despise routine.
Very much so.
And yet your book and your coaching program is about the six habits. Now, when I hear habit, I think routine. What am I missing in your perspective, in the way you look at it? Because if you hate routines and you teach the six habits that you uncovered that lead
ironic, isn't it?
To happiness, I'm like, okay, what, you know, I'm a curious bee, but I'm like, okay, I got to hear spill the tea.
Spill the tea. Okay. So there are types of habits like flossing, which took me years to finally cultivate that one. Now, thank you, Jesus, I'm a daily flosser. Thank you, dentist, too, for finally shaming me into it. But there's physical habits and then there's mental habits. And, you know, the reality is we all are creatures of routine. I just don't like to do the same activities over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by routine. If you told me I have to go to the gym every day for the rest of my life, I'd be like, well, then fucking call it a day because I'm done. That sounds awful. I don't want to do anything every day because it's not interesting. I like variety. Mm-hmm. However, I also tend to have the same response habitually to stress, to my husband saying something snotty to me, to my dog barfing on the carpet. I tend to react the same way over and over when my mom pisses me off, when my dad needs help. Like I'm still that person whenever my dad calls, who died? Because he never calls.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's my habit. So thing is, we all have these mental habits and the point of looking at a habit is examining an unconscious behavior, not a conscious behavior. I'd have to consciously force myself to go to the gym. I'm never cultivating that habit because I don't want to. But what I want to do is I want to take a look at what I already do, which is think. Mm-hmm. And I want to examine the quality of my thoughts. Are these helpful to me or are these harmful to me? And turns out when I was examining happiness and looking at my thoughts, I was like, oh my, these are quite low quality. I am setting myself on fire every day. That's great. Let's not do that. So I had to look at what these types of thoughts were. And they were awful habits that I had picked up as a child from interpreting situations incorrectly or making a decision when I was six and then never updating it when I was older. A lot of us do that, by the way.
Indeed.
And really just taking a look at like, whoa. If this is the ultimate, and I'm happy to describe the six habits, but like, if this one of these six ideals is the ultimate in expression of how I should like to really be thinking my thoughts and experiencing my life mentally, is there any choice in this? Can I choose to be that way? Yes, I can. And for me, the acquisition of a habit was a daunting subject. I looked into it. It's not 21 days. It's not 30 days. It actually takes you 66 days, according to science, to adopt a habit.
Yep.
I err on the side of caution and humanity. So I added more and I made it like a 90-day thing for myself because I'm stubborn. And here's the thing. I don't want to do any one thing habitually, like, I don't know, even go for a walk around the neighborhood every day for the rest of my life. But I can put up with 90 days of an intentional not habit and just do it repetitiously to change my thoughts permanently. I only have to think about it for a little while to get the lifetime benefit. So I was like, so basically this is going to suck for a little bit. but I can have long-term bennies. I think the juice might be worth a squeeze. All right. So I sat with the discomfort and I managed to change the way my brain was wired in the same way that any of us can do it. You just have to want it bad enough.
Yep. It's exactly what I teach and exactly what I do with my coaching clients is that most of us are trying to feel better with recycled thoughts of ourselves, our circumstances, and the world at large that we have been thinking unconsciously and habitually ever since we were little. Thoughts like, you're stupid, you're lazy, you're boring, you know, you can't do this. People are out to screw you. Don't trust anyone. All of those types of thoughts, the limiting beliefs that we all have. But because they're so habitual and unconscious, we don't question them. I think people are shocked. And you probably know a lot of the same resources that I do. But when people realize of all the thoughts they think every day, probably 60 to 80% of them are the same thoughts they thought yesterday and the day before and the year before and the decade before and the multiple decades before. You have literally been thinking, there's something wrong with me. I'm missing the point. I'll never catch up. You know, whatever your limiting thoughts are, you have been thinking them on autopilot all of your life. So unconsciously, you think that you're just narrating reality. You don't even realize it's a thought that it can be changed. That's exactly. Life-changing.
It is. The revelation that thoughts are habits too.
Yes.
That's the game changer all by itself.
Absolutely.
And then the specific areas that you need to be looking in, that's the second revelatory piece of information. It's like, oh, it's not just like, okay, well, like I got to do this and I got to do that. And it's not about drinking celery juice every morning or sitting on your meditation pillow. Like it's not that you do those things. It's why you do those things. And it's the things inside you that motivate you to start a business, to advocate for yourself when someone's treating you like shit, or to forgive yourself for a fuck up or whatever. Like it's all the internal motivation. So I read a study when I was researching for my TED talk that said that 85% of our thoughts are actually repeats from previous times. And that was a staggering amount. And 90% of the 85% are negative.
Yep.
I found that staggering and depressing as all hell. And also, it's just such a huge invitation for anyone that wants it to have that, oh my God moment that I had when I saw that study and realize, wow, I'm doing that? Yes, you are. Please come off of autopilot just for a moment. And let's actually look at this, look at the ship you've built for yourself with all these negative things. Now, do you think this vessel is going to carry you into self-love and wealth? Probably not. It's going to continue to go the way it's always been going, which is negativity, things not lining up for you, you hating yourself, blah, 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 blah. You have to build a different ship if you want a different destination. You just do. And it's not easy. It's really not. I don't want to give anyone the illusion.
It's not easy.
Type of work is easy.
But it's worth it.
It's not even fun, candidly.
But you know, when you think about it, Laura, like everything that you did, I mean, you overcame a lot of challenges from early life. You went on to become ridiculously successful. You did all the things, you had all the things, and you were fucking miserable because it was all on the outside. I mean, how fortunate you are with still half of your life left ahead of you, hopefully, to realize it's actually an inside job. I don't have to keep fluffing the pillows and buying new pillows and a new house and a new neighborhood and a new whatever. If I go inside and do the work, that's not easy, but it's within the reach of anybody that wants it. I can completely redecorate my mind to the point where everything I see is more beautiful. That is fucking amazing. And to know that that is available to anybody that wants it, this shit should be taught in grade school. We should not be letting little humans spend most of their lives thinking negative thoughts about themselves and not tell them that there's another way. That's even available to children. I mean, can you imagine how much more easy it would be to learn these concepts as a child before you have all the cultural conditioning built up that makes you resist and doubt it?
Well, it would also help you to not participate in a system that doesn't work. because you wouldn't find yourself succumbing to bullying or being the bully because of your own pain. Because hurt people, and just recycling an old trope, but it's true. If the kids that picked on me when I was like, I don't know, 10, were told, it's okay, you're worthy of love. It's okay to talk about your feelings, and it's okay to say, I'm sad right now. It's okay to say, I don't feel valuable, like no one loves me. It's okay to say, I need a hug. It's okay to just ask for validation. I don't think they would have bullied me. I think we probably would have been really good friends. Mm. But unfortunately, the young, immature mind does whatever it can to avoid pain. And the young, immature mind doesn't have a lot of tools. And it uses the tools it has. And it's quite primitive, really. And some of us, unfortunately, have not actually expanded beyond that point. Particularly a lot of people who started doing drugs in their teenage years, they actually did not progress past that point and still make decisions as a teenager and still react like a teenager, even though they're walking around in an adult body.
That's really true. I think I always think of that as the developmental arrest. And whatever age you were when you started using, that's the emotional level that you've attained. And you've really kind of gotten trapped there unless you start doing something to accelerate that growth on the outside. So when you think about your earlier life and then your kind of breakdown and then breakthrough and the way you think and participate in life now, Laura, what do you think is the single greatest change in your own transformation that has literally made you feel like a different person with a different identity?
I mean, not to be overly promotional, but it is the work that I've created. I can't really answer the question without saying it's kind of the shit that I researched. I mean, I researched it. I didn't do it to write a book. I wrote the book because I researched it for me and I felt so much better. And
well, let's spend a little minute here on you. I'm inviting you to do a little shameless self-promotion and tell us what led to the book, the TED Talk, the coaching program. Like literally, this is now your mission, your message, your manifesto, if you will. This is your, at least for now, it is why you're here and it's who you are and your gift to the world. So tell us what it is.
Well, thank you for the invitation to talk about it. So I discovered all these things and I put myself through the ringer to see if it really did make a difference. I adopted all the six habits, learned to be, these are the six habits, kind to myself as my default. Hmm. I learned to accept myself fully and offer myself unconditional love, forgiveness, and no more comparisonitis. I learned to be grateful, even for the shit sandwiches. I stopped taking life for granted. I finally learned to be present and enjoy just this particular moment, and also to sit with tragedy and pain. And instead of running away from pain, sit with it, talk about it, look at it, examine it, and just be present with things. I learned to invite goodness into my life and repel toxic energy like it's my fucking job, because it is. And I learned to go about my life with much more intention and really not just doing this whole momentum bullshit, but really pursuing something with reason, with purpose, and with genuine determination. And my intention will vary day to day. Sometimes it's just get dressed. Sometimes it's have fun. Sometimes it's build an empire. Who knows? But the six habits are kindness, acceptance, gratitude, presence, goodness, and intention. These are the six habits that are the foundation of a life well-lived. You can also live in the dark side, and then you can just have the typical American life. You pick. But I wanted a joyful, radiant life. And so I changed myself. And I started sharing my ideas with others. And I challenged them to do the work and look inside and see what was there and see if they could cultivate the habits too. And I've been doing this now for 2 years. And I have been sharing my theories with my clients. And I've had friends doing this. And I've had tons of people buy the 90-day habit mastery program and see tremendous results. And it's been really, honestly, life-giving for me because I managed to save myself from this bullshit illusion that mainstream media and like social media and magazines and fucking Hollywood have all conspired to create this thing where I'm just constantly manipulated. I freed myself from it. And now I truly am the driver of my own life again. And I am in control of my destiny, my joy, and I'm really mastering and living in my full sovereignty. And I want to invite other people to do this. And like, I don't care if I never make a nickel. My purpose at this point is to share this mission, because once you get this happy and once you realize how it's inside of us and how it's fucking free, it's inside of you. You don't need a magazine. You don't need Facebook. You don't need drugs. You don't need alcohol. You don't even need to live on a fancy island. You can live in the middle of a shit pile, in the middle of nowhere, and you could find these six things within yourself, and you could truly live a joyful life simply because you choose to, whether you have the money or not, whether you have the achievements or not, it doesn't matter. So my goal, my dream is to share this with as many people as I possibly can before I die, and really help people to realize that all of this stuff that we say is important is just stuff. And it's a distraction from what really matters. What really matters is inside. And for me and my mission, it is the six habits that revealed all of the things that truly matter and began to enliven my life and make it more actually vibrant.
I can imagine that there's any number of people hearing this now that are like, excuse me, I'll have what she's having, like that scene in the movie. But where they should start is probably, I would imagine, getting your book, right?
Yeah, grab the book. It's on Amazon. It's also on Audible. You can also go to my website at thesixhabits.com, thesixhabits.com. Yeah, there's paperback, there's ebook, there's audio. But yeah, all the book is the place to begin.
Yes, I will make sure that we include in the show notes a link to Laura's website, to the book, to her coaching programs. And you're not on social media anymore. So if they want to get a hold of you, they're going to have to get a hold of you through the website.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I'm not really a big fan of social media anymore. Anyway, even though, you know, I spent years on there because of my marketing company.
Yes.
But yeah, I love actually when people email me and shoot me a note through my website. Like if you read the book and it really touches your heart, please shoot me a note. I will personally respond. Every single person that takes the time, at least while I'm not super famous, that takes the time to write to me gets a personal response, and it truly lights me up to hear from people.
Well, based on this conversation, Laura, and I'm sure others that you and I will have in the future, I can't imagine that not so famous is going to last much longer. So enjoy your peace and quiet before you have to have an army of people holding back the hordes, because I'm sure you will, knowing just how important protecting your stillness and solitude is to maintaining all the freedom that you have gained from learning what it really takes to be a happy person. So I am so thrilled that you've been my guest today, and I look forward to connecting with you in the future, but I will not look for you on Instagram, I promise.
No. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here and share space with you and talk about something so important.
It's a pleasure.
Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD, and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
Well, one thing that you helped give me insight on is how sensitive I am. And because I'm an empath, being in traffic and loud noises throughout the day, just getting to home, that alone was really draining. And now working from home, it's like I'm able to conserve that energy. And working with the parents to really teach them kind of concepts and bigger things that have a bigger impact, because one thing that you also mentioned was because I was working so much, I didn't have time to do the things that were meaningful to me. And that included learning, getting into the grind. You kind of just like, okay, well, I'm just going to do, instead of really stepping back and looking at more strategic ways to have, a longer term plan.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.